My name is Craig Settledge, and when I'm not in Holden Village, I'm usually in Chicago or thereabouts. I'm on the staff of the Division for Ministry of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. My work is candidacy, primarily. I work with persons who are preparing to be pastors, associates in ministry, deaconesses, and diaconal ministers in the ELCA. I work with the 8 seminaries of the ELCA and all the synods. So I get around and get a chance to see a lot of this church of ours, and I'm very happy to be here at Holden. I know some of you are here for the first time, and I want to invite you to this. It's been a series on ministry. We've been talking about Luther's understanding of call and ministry, which really was a fundamental shift in the understanding of both those terms of ministry and call in the life of the Christian church. We've talked about, and we'll be talking today about ministry of the baptized. We've talked about the very various ministry possibilities that are in the ELCA. We've created a whole new category of lay ministers called diaconal ministers, and there are persons preparing right now for that new category of ministry. We'll be talking today about ministry of the baptized, and then on Friday, our last session for this week and my last day here before I leave on Saturday, we'll be talking about challenges to ordained ministry. What do we look for in pastors as the church moves into the 21st century? So today, we'll be talking about ministry of the baptized. Now, what does that mean? We've been saying in our conversations together that ministry, in its basic definition, is the service that God's people do in the world for the world. And therefore, ministry is not something that is limited to those who wear collars around their neck, like I do on occasion, who are called pastors, or even those persons who are employed by the church. But ministry is something to which all of God's people are called to. And we've talked quite a bit about that in earlier sessions, but I think it's worth repeating some of it today before we move into our discussion with our esteemed panel, which we'll meet shortly as they prepare themselves in their speeches. We said that the word call, which in Latin is vocatio, from which we get the word vocation. It's V-O-C-A-T-I-O. The word call has many different meanings, and we use them sometimes interchangeably without knowing it. I want to just repeat what we talked about last time, just because I think it's important and some of you weren't here last time. The first definition of call is that God calls all people through the gospel to faith in Jesus Christ. And that call is a call to be justified, to be forgiven, and to share through the waters of baptism in the life and death of Jesus Christ. It's a call that to which presumably all of you have responded in faith. Having responded to that call, the call to the through the gospel, through baptism, to faith in Christ, God then calls his people to ministry in the world. God equips through baptism, through the gifts of the Holy Spirit, every person for ministry. Not one of you can say, I have no gifts for ministry. Because in fact, we are told that God, through the Holy Spirit, gifts each person in baptism. So the question never is, do I have gifts for ministry? The question is, what are my gifts? What are my abilities? And for what ministry are those gifts and abilities suited? The other thing that we've said is that God does not call a person to a ministry for which God does not equip that person. So again, what can happen is if a person misunderstands God's call, that person can end up in a ministry setting in which they are not equipped and then not be able to carry out the task that that situation requires. So, first call is the call to the gospel, to faith. The second call is the call to ministry. The third call is to understand that God calls some persons to public ministry, or in the ELCA we call it rostered ministry. Those are persons who have the specific task on behalf of the church to proclaim and teach the Word of God. And yesterday we talked about the two great categories of public ministry. The one, the ministry of word and sacrament, ordained ministry. The other, the ministry of word and service. In the ELCA, we have three lay ministers, three categories of lay ministers who serve as ministers of word and service: associates of ministry, deaconesses, and diaconal ministers. But all of those together in the ELCA are about 1% of the total baptized. Now, if we have a church in which 99% of the baptized members depend on the other 1% to do all the ministry, what kind of church will we have? Not a very strong or vibrant one. And the problem that we, I'm afraid, fall into so often as members of congregations is to assume that we call, that's the fourth definition of call, that we call someone to serve us, a pastor, usually, perhaps an associate ministry, and that person then does ministry, and we sit back, and we're ministered unto. So, as baptized members of the church, we expect that those who are called and whom we pay to do this work will minister to us, which is, in fact, their calling, forgetting that that's only half the equation, that having been ministered to by a pastor who proclaims the Word of God, who administers the sacraments, who provides pastoral care, who counsels, who sits at our bedside, who marries us, who buries us, and does all those important things, we forget what the other part of the equation is, that having been ministered unto, we forget that we are called to minister to the world.
I like to submit, we don't forget. We were never really told in the first place.
Okay.
The tradition of the Lutheran Church back from Germany and etc., even in California, unto this day, some of our members say baptism, great, confirmation is graduation, and burial service is fine, and otherwise, no responsibilities.
Yeah, okay. I think you're right. I'm glad you as a layperson can say that with more credibility than I as a pastor could. Thank you. That's right. And that's what this series has been about, primarily. We've really not, people have asked, well, I don't want to spend a whole week talking about pastors. Well, we've not been talking about pastors for a whole week, and we won't be, only on Friday. But the point is now, how do we understand that each baptized member of Christ Church has, in fact, been called to ministry in the church and in the world? And that's the next problem, that even those who have understood, I do have some responsibility as a Christian, but that responsibility is limited then, or seen as confined to supporting the life of a particular congregation, and maybe serving on a synod committee. But the idea of being ministry in the world, well, that's not my job. That's the pastor's job, isn't it? No, it's not. So what we want to do today, and I'll spend some more time at the end of our session, and we're going to have plenty of time for discussion, but I want to simply illustrate this. Now, I don't know what these three gentlemen do. I mean, I want to find out with you. Some of you who are their spouses will know what to expect better than I. But what I wanted to do is to begin our conversation by hearing how they and perhaps some of you have understood your call to ministry in the world, ministry in daily life. One more thing, and then I'll turn it over to the group. One of the breakthroughs that Luther had was to understand, unlike the church in which he was a part, that a person's ministry or calling, vocation, was not limited to what a person did in their work, but rather that each Christian finds herself or himself in a whole variety of what Luther called stations in life. The first station most of us have is a child in a family. And then we begin to create careers, jobs. We may marry. We have a relationship to our spouse. So all of those roles that we take on as, let's see, what am I? Son, husband, pastor, friend, all of those are roles in which I am called to exercise ministry in daily life. And the same thing can be said for each of you. So what we're talking about, again, is not simply what we do in our occupations, as important as that may be, but what we do also beyond our occupations. Is that enough introduction to get you guys started? All right, you're on. Introduce yourselves and...
My name is Ron Osborne, and when I heard Craig's session a week ago, this same session, I recognized exactly what he was saying and where I had a very strong feel for the call to a ministry, not realizing that that's what it was until later in my life. For many, many years, I was active in Boy Scouts and in Red Cross, probably about 40 years in each organization. And bit by bit, I recognized that there are various talents that we can give, recognizing where my best talents lay and so on, as we all should do, as Craig alluded to. And as I became more and more active in church work, which wasn't until probably about 20 or 25 years ago, I was a little bit late coming into my my church life. I realized that God has given us all these talents, and He expects us to use them. And we need to recognize them, and with all different people and different types of talents, what can each of us do? The leadership that was provided through Boy Scouts and Red Cross and those types of things led to teaching expertise. I retired after 30 years in education. And the desire to educate and to teach is still very, very strong in spite of the retirement. And as I studied more and more in the Bible, and going back to... this, to me, is a very specific call. I go back to Deuteronomy 15:11, and as I studied more in the Bible and got more involved with social ministry in a former church, we realized, my wife and I, that hunger in the world is a very, very important concern, and we said that we felt called to do this. In Deuteronomy 15:11, "For the poor will never cease out of the land, therefore I command you," it's pretty strong, "I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy and to the poor in the land." And from that point, we were unable to really devote ourselves to hunger issues until we were retired, although we were on social ministry committee and a few other things. As soon as we retired, we said, this is really, sincerely, a call that we feel, and ministry is hunger is our ministry. So we right away got involved with a food bank. We were elected to members of the board and became co-presidents and effected a number of improvements, and it was a very humbling experience. Of course, Bread for the World, we feel very strongly about ELCA World Hunger Appeal. I'm a member of the Human Resource Council, which deals with homeless and people and trying to get housing for homeless. We are trying to get a social ministry committee going in our present church. They have not had one. That amazes me, but it's been 6 years and we're still working to try to get one. And I just got involved on the board of directors for the Montana Food Bank Network, which distributes food throughout the state of Montana. All of these are very, very humbling experiences. And if we keep in mind that this is a ministry and a call, and that God works in very strange ways, and we feel the prod very, very strong. It sounds like a lot that we list all of the organizations and so on, and I'm sure we all feel the same way. So we have to go back to what Jeff Merkel said in his matins yesterday, and I think his term was the paralysis of doing too much or getting over-involved or whatever. You can you get too much and then you're paralyzed. You can't really do what you're supposed to do. So that's one of the warnings in getting too involved. So balancing it out is necessary. But we also deliver Meals on Wheels, which is an hour a week, and we are involved with hospice, which is also a very humbling experience. But our number one responsibility that my wife and I have taken on is the work with the food bank. And there, we continually go back to Matthew 25. And this is something that when you're sitting in the food bank and meeting the people face to face, it's something you have to remind yourself as a Christian when they come in. And they're dirty, the poor people reek of alcohol sometimes or whatever. And it's a very strong Christian duty to think constantly of, for I was hungry and you gave me food, I was thirsty and you gave me drink, I was a stranger and you welcomed me, I was naked and you clothed me, I was sick and you visited me, I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see thee hungry and feed thee, or thirsty and give thee drink? And when did we see thee a stranger and welcome thee, or naked and clothe thee? And when did we see thee sick in prison and visit thee? And the king will answer them, truly, I say to you, as you did it to the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you did it to me. And it's something that we have conscientiously lived by. And as I said, it's a very humbling experience, and our lives have been very, very fulfilled because of this call that we feel very sincerely.
So you really have taken the issue of hunger,
yes,
and in a variety of ways have seen that as being your specific
that's our primary
call.
Right. But to diversify, we're also with hospice, and a few other things that we just to keep a little diversity in there, so it's not.
And your wife's not here because she's on.
And she's right now. That's right. We are volunteers here on the staff at Holden, and my wife is feeding the hungry and the dying.
Thank you.
I'm Dale Broholm, and I'm from Hopkins, Minnesota, and I feel that we all. Have been put here and we are called to do certain things but not everything. For example, I feel that some of our talents can be used wisely and some of them maybe we don't have enough, and if we volunteer for things that we shouldn't be doing, we could run into problems. I think that when we have a call to serve, that number one, you should be genuinely interested and support the organization or the activity rather than what a lot of people do, and I don't think it's right, for social or political reasons. But things that you have a real strong interest, and I'll just use one example. Saratoma is a service organization which is helpful in screening elderly people and neighborhood groups for hearing problems. And working with the community and also with various other activities to raise money to serve that need was a very strong one, I felt, for myself. And that's good. If there's an organization or a need where I don't feel it's something that I strongly believe in, I don't feel that we're called for that. We're called for what we can do and those things which need us. Another interesting thing too, and I'll just relay a little true story that happened to me, and I'm sure we're all active in our churches in various capacities and have been in one way or another. Sometimes the call that you may have may be rewarded in very different and unusual ways. We recently at our church were in the process of calling a pastor. And I'm one of the ushers on one of the teams and fill in usually when other teams need me and all this sort of thing. And we, in our bulletin, we had a little insert where people could indicate any pastors or any candidates that they might feel would be appropriate for our church. And after, this was about 3 weeks that this insert was in, and 1 week a couple came up to me and they said, "You want to hear something?" I said, "Sure." And they said that their youngest son, who was about 8, was reading this during the service, and he said, "What's that guy's name there? I want to write him in." And it's not monetary, but it really makes you feel good that a young child feels that you're serving them and that they appreciate it. Even though he didn't say anything to me, but the story from his parents, and it really is a reward that you don't often get. Sure, you can get your name in the paper and all those sorts of things, but those are meaningful things.
I'll talk to you about a seminary after the session.
I have given a sermon before. Okay. But at any rate, I don't have any more things to say, but I feel that very strongly, if it's something that you really have a strong interest in, and that's where the call is really for you to do that and worry about what rewards might come, don't worry about it.
Thank you.
I was hoping you'd go on for another half hour.
Well, I was going to talk about your speech, but...
Oh, you didn't know what I was going to say, did you?
I know.
Maybe I don't either. I've been sitting here watching the heartbeat of the three fellows up here. You can always watch that, you know, watch their feet. And I noticed that mine is beating just about twice as fast as Ron's, so a little stress there, I guess. Well, actually, I'm Carl Dino, and from Osage, Iowa. And my wife is here listening to me this afternoon, so I'll have to be really honest with you. And we are...
We hope so.
I was born and raised in the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church and married a Norwegian, so that kind of put me in the ELC years ago, Evangelical Lutheran Church, which is now the ELCA.
That's right.
And...
We
go back
against you.
Okay. Thanks.
Can a German and Norwegian find happiness? The
Yeah, but you put a little Scotch and a little Holland Dutch on that. That kind of messes up too. But anyway, in church work, I really came more involved after we almost reached retirement, because during my working years, I was involved in sales work and territory management with large companies and managed as high as 5 states, so I did a lot of traveling. And we did live in about 5 or 6 different cities while I was doing that work, and in every city that we lived in or town, the church became a very important part of our life. And I happen to be involved in music and like to sing. And you might say I had a calling to do that. And I've done a lot of singing through the years and solo work and sang in choirs. And I feel that that is one calling that a person can feel is real worthwhile, because it does put a lot of thoughts into minds of people when they listen to the words that you're bringing out to them through music. And then I have also felt the feeling to be involved in the church itself through being an officer on the worship committee, music committee, and the church councils, and so on, and being on call committees, and that's a calling, isn't it, to be on a call committee? I've been on several of those and been involved in that. And then as we matured, you might say, and came to our years of retirement, Holden Village called, you might say, and this is our third year that we've been out here, and have volunteered on the staff to work here for 3 weeks each of the last three summers. And I am involved in repair work here in the village and keep the light bulbs burning and doing those things. And Sylvia, my wife, works in the crafts, and you might say that is her calling, to work in crafts. So there are many different ways in life that you can feel that you have had a calling to help promote and further the Word of God and the work of God. At home, I'm also involved with the Elderbridge Agency for Aging, on a regional board for that, which has a lot to do with feeding the needy and elderly in Iowa. And about half the budget of $3,780,000 in our 20-county region goes to feeding the elderly people in the area through the senior citizens program, as far as their meal at noon is concerned. And so that is a big, big step in helping feed the elderly people of the state. And those are the different things I do in life and have felt are worthwhile, and I feel it's a calling that I have more or less answered.
Thank you.
Are you next, aren't you?
No, I don't think so.
You don't feel cold?
We've had a lot of male voices. We need to hear from
some women among us. I'd be interested just to hear any responses, or if anyone would just like to react or respond to what you heard. Yes.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of the men talk about being selective and not deluding yourself. And you know, somewhere along we need to learn how to help congregational members as well as congregational leaders to keep that idea in mind. I can remember when we moved from South Dakota to California, one of the pledges I took was to learn how to say no, because if you're not careful, you end up being swamped.
Yes,
and once you forget to, you know, how do you say the word occasionally, things just seem to descend on you. And I wondered if you had any clues as to what you did to be selective, or what goes on in your congregation that helps others to be selective about using their gifts rather than just using their time.
I might answer that if I grasp the question right. In other words, in many organizations and churches, you have two or three people doing
20%
all the work, and everybody else is sitting around, and it's like the 1% with the maybe one more percent, and then everybody else is sitting. I'll just give you a situation that I had. It's not the church that we're in now, but it was a small church in Minneapolis, and from a very poor neighborhood. And a very small church council. And previous to the time that I was president, there was, you know, you'd count the money, and everybody would do things sort of haphazardly. And you had people from all variety of occupations. And I remember a couple especially, they in a trade, and not the type of person you'd find in a church council. I mean, not the typical kind. Hardworking, greasy, all this sort of thing, okay? And so what I did, because I could see that same problem in our church, I gave each one an assignment, each person on the council, a specific committee assignment, which had never been done, and put this one individual, and I'll call him Bob, that was his name, and he has since passed away, and none of you know him, so I'll call him Bob. And each one, you know, did their job, and he developed his particular committee, which was not a real big one, but was one that was challenging for him. And he did a tremendous job on it. And it saved some of those people that we know that are involved with everything. They sort of were able to fall back a little bit because there was somebody else doing something. And this happened with the whole council. And you have to be real tactful when you do something like that, because you certainly don't want to lose people that have volunteered, and you don't want to feel that they're not needed anymore either. But that's what we did, and it worked out real fine.
Others?
Yes.
I just wanted to comment how your question sort of tags on to, it's not the exact same question, but I think it's sort of a permutation of the same question that we've discussed at other sessions, which was how to appropriately use the gifts that any one person is given, as opposed to placing just body into a job, whether that job fits the body or not. And yours, I think, it's related to that, in that I think typically in churches, not only do we put any willing body in any job, whether or not it's their calling or they have the gift for it, but we tend to take that very same willing body and place it into all the jobs we have, instead of looking for other people to help out. And I think that's definitely something that we need to keep looking at.
And so if there could, for example, be in a congregation, the pastor and a group who begin to talk about that discernment we've talked about, discernment of gifts and abilities, so that there's a correct match. Mm-hmm. Part of it is what each individual must do for herself or himself. It's knowing who you are, and you know yourself better than anyone else, except perhaps your spouse. But to know who you are, what are your talents? We use talents as a traditional word. I use the word gifts and abilities. But what things can you do? What are you good at? And then what are the needs of the church and the world that those talents can be used to address? I saw
there are a lot of people who aren't able to really take a look at themselves mm-hmm. in that way.
So they need help. Yes,
sometimes
Kathy.
Sometimes you might not know some of your talent. I mean, to give a personal, concrete example, I was approached last year to be the secretary of the church council this year, and I just kind of laughed at them. It's like I never would have considered that, I didn't think. But out of guilt, you know, I said, well, I was tired of doing coffee donuts. I've been in fellowship, and I did something different. So I said, all right, I'll do that. And I really enjoyed it. I mean, and I don't know that I take best minutes, but everybody comments that they're wonderful because I think I overdo it. But I found that I wouldn't even mind being asked to stay on for another year. And I find myself very surprised because I figured I'll get through this year, I'll do my job, and we'll be done. But I enjoy being on, it's actually a pretty good job. You're on the council, but you don't have a committee. You know, you come to committees. But I would have never considered that as one of my gifts. I don't consider myself that that's something I do well, but by being placed in that position and taking it on a little unwillingly, I've been very surprised. So there might be people that might need to be placed in a couple jobs and then find one that does.
Right, well, it's part of the discernment process, I think. It's not just an internal process, but we also need to hear what others see
other
in us.
Yeah, so it goes both ways. Yeah. I mean, you might know you have a specific gift and you just can't do something, but sometimes you might have to be shoved a little bit and then find out.
That's a good, let me just, if I'm interjecting, I see the hands up. For those of you who weren't here before, I want to mention this, because what Pam and Kathy were just talking about is that discernment is a process of both internal reflection, prayer, as well as someone else or others looking at you and saying back to you what they see. Someone, in your case, Kathy, said they saw something in you that you hadn't seen in yourself. That often happens, and people will say, for the first time, someone said to them, I think you could do this, or I think that maybe God is calling you to do that, and the person himself or herself never thought of that.
This book, What Shall I Say? Discerning God's Call to Ministry, is not simply about discerning God's call to ordained or rostered ministry. It's about what we're talking about today. It's in the bookstore. One of the authors is very close to you here. He's that great bear of a man that walks around and says, I'm Walter Bowman, summer teaching staff coordinator.
He has those jokes.
And he has those jokes. And he'd be delighted, I'm sure, if you got one of these and asked him to sign it for you. It's in the bookstore. It's $4.95. And we developed it less than a year ago. In fact, a year ago right now, it was in the final edit. And it's also meant to be used by individuals who think God may be calling them to be a pastor or a rostered lay minister. But anyone would benefit from reading this book and just going through the process. Now, your hand is up first.
I'd like to expand our notion of ministry just a little bit. I think the examples that we've heard have been of roles that we do for ministry, serving on boards or coming to Holden, being on staff or being secretary of the council. But that ministry is also a mindset or an orientation, and it's an openness to the neighbor and the needs of those around us. And
yes.
I think the strongest role models that I had for that kind of ministry were my grandma and my great aunt and some of the older women in my life who were out bringing meals to people who were ill or in some kind of need, bringing meals at the time of death. Or my grandma was a nurse, and she was always out caring for people who needed help in a time of crisis or over the longer term. And that's the ministry of the baptized, that we all have those opportunities, and that baptism, when we truly take on our baptism, means that we reorient ourselves and see those opportunities. And whether we do some official thing like being on a board or have some kind of title that we take on, that we all have opportunities for ministry, official or not, seen or not.
Yes, thank you. And
reaching out to other people is a very important aspect.
That's first identified in the New Testament when, I'm going to miss this, Timothy's grandmother Eunice was his example in the faith. I also remember the turning of the verse, Jesus loves me, this I know, for my mother told me so. And, and for many of us, that's where we learn it. We do learn it from a parent or a loved one, and they are examples to us. Thank you for reminding us of that.
There's another point that I'd like to, similar to something we referred to earlier. A number of years ago, well, in our present congregation, we've been there about 6.5 years, as Nancy and I started to get involved with some of the community activities, we were developing friendships in our new congregation, and we detected that a number of people who were active in the church were active only in the church. And they engaged us in conversation. We talked about what our mutual interests are, or what our general interests are, and there was a revelation on the part of a couple people that said, you can serve outside the church and it still counts. That concept, it wasn't
phrased. That's not a good work, is it?
No, that's old.
But it wasn't phrased exactly that way. But the point that they were making was, in my Christian life, I should be involved just in the church, and that's the most important part. Well, we, as you heard me say before, we're involved with the food bank and a number of other things, and only a little bit with the social action of the church and my wife's on the visitation committee and so on. But we've offered our services or our assistance as much as we can in assisting with understanding hunger types of issues and so on, so that people can get further involved and use what they've learned, their faith and their calling, and reach out and get way beyond just a church committee or a church role or something like that. And there's a number of more people who are reaching far beyond our congregation. And it doesn't have to be just limited.
Sue?
It is my belief in that when particularly pastors
energy is relieved of administration and organization to do that for which he is trained in proclamation and word and sacrament, that he will not only be preparing people to work within the congregation, but also it will be seen that that equipping is to move out beyond also, so that someone like yourself would be nourished within that congregation, not just to put your energy there, but to also to move beyond that.
So what we're saying here is that we need somehow to help each other, and our pastors need to equip the members of their congregations to understand that their call to ministry in daily life is a call into the world in all of its dimensions, not to neglect the community, the household of faith, the church, but to see the life within the congregation as being that place in which we are nourished and fed and equipped and empowered to then carry our ministry into the world in whatever area of life we find ourselves, whether as employed, retired, in homes, in relationships with others, in a whole variety of activities. And how we do that is the challenge. You're saying it very well. A number of you have said to me, this is something new. I haven't heard this before, or at least not heard it in quite this way. Well, it's been there since the 16th century. So we somehow have lost something in creating a situation where we understand ministry only in clerical terms. And I'm saying that as a pastor in the church. Yes, please.
Well, like the Stephen ministry is excellent.
Share about that. Are you a part of that? Have been trained?
I didn't take the Stephen
ministry. But you know of it.
I'm a nurse, and I do a lot of Stephen ministry kinds of things every day.
Yes.
But it's I don't know. I don't know how many hours. It's about 50 hours. It's a training program for lay people in the church on interactions with people. It's a confidential kind of thing. They take on someone in a needy situation, a one-on-one ministry.
It's a program, and I've not gone through it. But my understanding is it's been a very effective program in helping congregations to mobilize more of their members through a training program to equip them for what we're talking about right here. Thank you for mentioning that.
Sylvia, my wife, went through the Stevens ministry.
And you match people. For instance, we have lost 4 babies at birth, and I just automatically, if I hear of someone that has, I really feel a bond with them, and we have done this in a church, and it's surprising that when it's done on a confidential basis, the things that come out that you would have no idea a person would have empathy for, not sympathy, but empathy, and that is so important, because I can think back to when we were losing babies, the people that talked to me that had lost a baby, it meant so much more to me.
Because you had,
because they knew that I had gone through. Mm-hmm. May I bring up something?
Please.
Something different? Some lecture I attended, they brought out again that the reason people join churches is not the pastor and not the preaching and not, I don't know, the building, but it's still the people and the friendship. And we have moved a number of times, and the church has always been where our social life has been. But I think people underestimate the value of friendliness and speaking to people. And I have a really good story to illustrate this. We came from a church, how big was Zion? It was big.
2,400.
And there are always queues to clicks, and this sort of thing. But I was coming out, and I tripped over a lady's crutch. And I apologized. And I was flabbergasted when I looked down. She had one leg. And we got to talking, and she said, well, I'd like to see the church. And we had just installed a new elevator. And so Carla ran the elevator up and down, and we took her around. And we became very good friends, which was kind of unusual, but I don't know, a couple years later, she said, you know, the Sunday I went to Zion, I decided if one person spoke to me, I was going to join.
She didn't put that crutch out, did she?
I was not. I just always thought God had me triple with that, that crutch. But you just, and see, having moved, we know the importance. But in many small towns, they have not moved. Or even in cities, probably you've been there a long time. And you have no idea how important it is to talk to people. It irritates me because you go to a basketball game or a football game and you would talk to a drunk. But in church, you just don't talk to people.
I try to avoid drunks myself, but yes, thank you. And the word is hospitality. You know, how do we become more hospitable to people who visit? And we Lutherans don't do a very good job of that, again. And I think I don't think we have to have committees to just be friendly and be hospitable, just to welcome, to be a welcoming church. There's a series of little bumper stickers or something that's produced by the ELC about a welcoming church. Yes, thank you for that. There's a number of hands. I want to be sure everybody gets a chance to speak. Yes, please.
I was interested with the three speakers that they seem to have come gradually to this circumstance in their life, both in age and in their opinions of the service. Now, I'm asking you, sir, as representative of your experience in the larger direction, are there such things as epiphanies in terms of realizing the Lord? Do people have Damascus Road experiences? And are those people the ones who want to be missionaries and pastors? And if so, then further, does that have any bearing on our church's acceptance of them into the ministry?
If I had diagrammed that sentence, I was thinking of doing it in Latin and kind of just having the structure. If I understand your question, it is primarily around how do people come to understand ministry? That kind of, is it a sudden thing or is it a gradual?
Variations.
Oh, I think there are a whole variety. In terms of, you may have been present, or maybe you weren't, at one session talking about the understanding of call to be a pastor, that more particular call, or and for as I listen to seminary students talk, and I know my own self and my generation of pastors, I would say the majority of Lutherans, it is not an epiphany as in the Damascus Road. It is a more gradual realization. However, having said that gradual, most people can point to a particular individual or a particular time in their life in which that realization came. So it might not be a blinding moment, but it was in a specific context in which a person began to understand. Now, you see, part of it is that for those of us who are pastors, our most dramatic sense of call has been likely related to our call to ordained ministry, because it's such a small number of people who have that call. But I only imagine, and I, from lay people I've talked with, that there is also, as Ron was talking about, a time in one's life when you say, oh, now I get it, now I understand, but I didn't understand before. Yes, Carl.
I can remember after I got out of the Army back in 1946. It's a long time ago, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, anyway, I was working with my brother on a farm, and an older cousin looked at me one day, and he said, they called me Sonny at that time. Sonny, I think you should become a minister. I said, you do? He said, yes, you should. Well, I never answered the call. I never felt the call, so I didn't go into it. But I've been active in the church.
Yeah.
but you still have to feel it within yourself.
Yeah, we talked about it. It is again part of our Lutheran understanding of call, particularly call to public ministry, that it's both an internal sense that God is calling you to that ministry, but also the church's confirmation, the church saying, we really believe that you are called, and we see those gifts. And there are times when someone outside will say to an individual, I think you ought to be a pastor, and like you just said, that's not been confirmed internally. There are other times when individuals feel they have the internal call, and no one else sees it. And that's also clear evidence. This is a terrible joke, and I promised I would never tell it, but now I find myself drawn to telling it. You've heard the old thing about the person plowing in the fields and seeing the clouds, the cloud formation, with the letters PC spelled out. And this, oh, you haven't. Oh, this is an old, old joke. This is older, far older than I am. The man sees this PC in the clouds, and he goes talk to his minister and says, preacher, I believe that God is calling me to be a preacher. And the minister says, why? He said, well, I was plowing in the fields and I saw in the clouds PC. And the preacher says, well, what did you think that meant? And he says, well, I think it means preach Christ. And the minister thought a while and says, you know, Wilbur, knowing you as I do, I think it means plant corn. Oh, I love telling old jokes and people laughing. There was, yes, sir.
I think the biggest thing drawing people to the church today is what kind of youth program you have. And you better have a good youth program.
That is very important.
And I think another thing that's staring us in the face with the church is the fact that losing members or not retaining members, we don't seem to have a follow-up system to keep members. If we had a healthy church, then the church itself would take care of the new members. We're supposed to be getting the new members. The preacher's not supposed to be out there knocking on doors. Mm-hmm. Now, this is maybe my church right now. We've belonged to different settings over the years, but the biggest church I ever belonged to was 6,000 plus members. Lutheran. We've been on the other side, and I've even preached to, 15 or 20 people?
Or less.
Sometimes we thought we were doing great. We had 10 people there.
We mopped the floors, waxed the floor. We kept the books, and, you know, kind of done it all really. But that's kind of the way I feel. I think we have an important job to keep the members we have busy, happy. And we do have a bad reputation with the church about being not friendly to a lot of people. They get that impression. I don't know why.
It's a Scandinavian boy.
I think that's probably
I think some of that is.
Yeah, our congregation that we belong to in Osage, they have 1,500 members. And we've been blessed with large congregations, definitely 2,400, 1,500. But the fellow that is our senior pastor now, Pastor Denny Hansen, used to be the youth director. Then he was a terrific youth director, and the children really respected him and liked him. And now he is our senior pastor and is showing up in the attendance in church. The young people are really coming forth. And even the children's sermons, the congregation that we used to belong to, where we had 2,400 members, they might have 12 little children up there in front for a children's sermon. Mm-hmm. And this, Pastor Denny, has, 30, 40, 50 children up there for the children's sermon when they conduct it. And his associate is just as good as he is. And it has a lot to do with bringing people up. The senior class in high school, when they were requested to take part in the service, there were about 40 of them up in front singing. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it does, you're right. It's very important.
They used to have a lot of good wrestlers come out of
those things.
They still do.
Yes, ma'am. You.
I think it seems to me a lot of our problem is retaining them after confirmation. Right. There's been a long period of time that they felt, well, we're done now. And if the parents haven't really followed on this point, or the parents haven't felt the commitment to encourage the children. We recently added a youth associate to our church who has made all the difference in the world. Now, we get 50, 60 children up for the children's sermon, and we're a congregation of about 560. Mm-hmm. But we've got a program for the three to kindergarten age group. This is a Wednesday night. Three to kindergarten. We've got one for the 1 through 3. We've got one through the 4 through 6. One for the junior high and one for the senior high. This is all Wednesday nights. And there is a dinner that goes along with this. And these kids get to know each other from the very beginning, and they follow all the way through. And we're finding that even after confirmation, they're there. Mm-hmm. We had a group of, what was it, something like 24 that went from Omaha, Nebraska up into South Dakota for a week working on Indian homes and repairing. And the kids weren't ready to come home at the end of the week. They really wanted to stay. Now the minister went with, and the youth associate went with, and worked side by side with them. But, I mean, we have seen in the 4 years that our present pastor's been there, we have seen our youth program just go from almost nil after confirmation to just balloon.
And it seems to me that the challenge to our churches, our congregations, and our church is to see this not as trying to figure out ways to entertain the young, but to challenge them with the gospel, that their own being claimed by Christ, their Christian faith, and how that does in fact make a difference in the world. And if we can show the young, first of all, what they have been given in the gospel, how they have been gifted, and then they're aware of the needs. There's not a young person that I've ever talked to who's not conscious of the needs. It's also often, though, a despair about what to do, that nothing can be done. And we're saying in this conversation that as each Christian is called to live out his or her faith, that's doing something. And it's to move people from despair or resignation or inertia into living out the faith. And I think when you do that with youth, they do respond.